Listen to The Rush with Reshmi Nair and Scott MacArthur.
This is Smart Speakers
on News Talk 1010.
Toronto.
And today, joining us on our Smart Speaker series on this Wednesday afternoon, Genevieve Tomney, Vice President, Public Affairs at Proof Strategies, and Dan Riskin, News Talk 1010's science expert. Hello to you both.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm going to bet you guys are as excited as I am that we have an Auditor General's report out today, because we get to look at all the embarrassing things the government screwed up on. A lot of the stuff in this thing, Dan, is COVID-related. I guess that makes sense. We're still kind of living in the fallout of that pandemic here. Some of it is pretty bad and egregious, but I also think some of it is just explained by the fact that the government had to reinvent the wheel a bunch of times because it really was flying by the seat of its pants.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look back at an emergency and you analyze every millisecond of decision making, you're going to find things that you wish you'd done differently. But kudos to everybody who managed to get through that pandemic and some tough decisions that had to be made. One of the things that comes out in this report is that doctors were paid five times more than nurses to give COVID shots. And so that seems like a confusingly unfair system. But I think what it really boils down to is that doctors spend more time in school, so their time is more valuable per hour. So if they're spending that time giving shots when somebody else who doesn't cost as much per hour could be giving the shots, that's a misallocation of funds. And so it's not so much that doctors got paid more than nurses, it's that why were so many doctors giving shots when other people who were paid less per hour could have been giving the shots? But again, you're going back and sort of splitting hairs over a pandemic. What's a little more damning, I think, in the report is where the government is talking about highways and where they want to put funding and the fact that they seem to totally disregard their experts. And nothing drives me crazier than when you get somebody who is an expert on something, you ask them their opinion, and then you ignore them. And here you have a whole bunch of engineers and city planners and planners of urban areas who are saying where the money should go in terms of highways, and a government that's sort of ignoring that and saying, but I like the number 413, so that's where I want to put the money, no matter what you say.
I don't know if it's just that you like it or that you have friends who want you to like it. Jen, what stood out to you? The Highway 413 issue in the AG report is louder than anything flagged during the pandemic.
Yeah, and Reshmi, you know, back when I was a journalist, the AG report was always a bit of a, you know, kind of Christmas come early in terms of stories that matter to your audience. And this is a perfect example because, people care about where their taxpayer dollars are going. And I do want to just go back to the doctors and nurses and the COVID vaccines for a moment, because I know we've been talking a lot about, being able to attract healthcare workers and retain healthcare workers and jobs. And I think we all expect that there's likely to be some disparity, but it was really dramatic to me. I think, we can wrap our heads around the idea that a surgeon is going to be paid differently for a specialty procedure that no one else can do. But, you know, what it says to me, I think, is that we need to take a closer look at compensation as part of the conversations that we're having around opening up scope of practice for people like nurses and pharmacists, especially if we want to keep these people in the profession when they're facing burnout and crazy long hours at a time like this.
Well, Reshmi, as I was saying to you earlier, I mean, I wouldn't have had doctors or nurses doing this. I would have had doctors and nurses present on the site in case anyone had an adverse reaction. I would have trained volunteers to push the plunger here, free up the healthcare resources for where they were needed here. Every time I suggested that during the pandemic, people are like, well, we can't possibly do that because of the licensing and the regulations. Like, guys, either we pivot during an emergency or we don't.
Well, I said that to you today, too, because I don't know if I would take a shot from someone who didn't have some sort of medical background. But what do our smart speakers say? Jen, would you have taken a vaccine dose from someone who was pulled off the street and trained within a few days?
Yes, absolutely. I would have.
Dan?
Yeah, I don't think so. I put a lot of confidence into the training that people get with their different skills. I mean, if you train them properly, and then presumably they would meet the requirements that are set. So pharmacists can do it, but pharmacists are not just people off the street that have never thought about needles. And also, it's not doing it right. It's what happens when something goes wrong. What happens when you pull the plunger and it doesn't go back all the way, and it normally did, and it doesn't quite feel right. Not having that experience and not having the extra training, I think, would show up. And all it takes is for one, you know, horrible thing to happen to some kid, and then the confidence in the entire vaccination system falls in the toilet. So it's not really just about you and the fact that, yeah, you know what, I'll roll the dice and let this person who was trained, you know, as an auto mechanic, give me a shot this time. I think it really matters that people are trained properly. I think here what we really see is, you know, if you're going to take a doctor and you're going to ask them to spend time doing a job, you should pay them what you pay a doctor. And they go to school for a long time and become very specialized in order to become doctors. And so their time costs a lot more money than it does for other people who don't have as much training.
Yeah, and so I guess the story that's unraveling is this government does not have enough nurses to get through a pandemic. And so we, as the taxpayer, are paying more for doctors to do what nurses could do. That might be right. The takeaway. The Auditor General's report also flagged that in the last 5 years, auto insurance premiums in Ontario rose 14%. 14% is a lot of money. And that's about $1,642. The average auto insurance premiums in the province increased by 14% from 2017 to 2021 to $1,642. We pay probably the highest premiums out of every province, and we have the lowest crashes. So why is it this way, and what more could the government be doing, Jen? Do we have Jen? Jen doesn't want to talk.
Is this one of the famous mutes on it? Well, let me jump in because I have some thoughts on this. I grew up in Alberta and, you know, next to BC, and everybody always talked about how much more expensive auto insurance was in BC. And it was because they took into account your age in one province and they didn't take into account your age in the other province. So if you were 16, you were getting dinged in one province for your age, and in the other province, it didn't matter. You were just thrown into the bucket with everybody else. And so when you're young, that's a big payoff. And later on, it's not so great. And so here you have sort of the same thing where you're splitting hairs. It depends if you live in London, Ontario, you might be paying $1,200. In Brampton, you might be paying $3,350. So more than double the amount, almost triple the amount, just based on where you live. And so what's fair? Do you make it based on where you live? Do you make it based on how much you drive? Some insurance providers let you put a little monitor in your car so that if you never speed and you're always driving nicely, they get those data back at head office. And so they can give you a discount as a result, but you're being tracked. Lots of questions go into this in terms of what's fair, but insurance is a gambling game for the insurance companies, and they have to cover their losses. They have to charge enough to make a profit. So the question is just who pays it, and how do you distribute that across the population?
You know, Jen, I have a friend in Toronto, born and raised in Quebec, but has lived in Toronto for years. Never plans on moving back. Got married here, has a family here. Never going back to Montreal. Will never give up the Quebec license plate because the car insurance is a lot cheaper.
I don't know if you're allowed to do that. I think I don't know if it's
appropriate to do that. I know that's what's happening.
Well, appropriate. And of course, then they have, you know, which states in the U.S. will give you demerit points when you're, you know, if you get caught speeding and all that stuff. I mean, it's a whole game. In Rhode Island, when I lived there, and Rhode Island has got this long history of being just like a weird mafia run, strange town. But there was a friend of mine who, and the license plates are just 5-digit numbers, just no letters, just 5-digit numbers. And all of a sudden, my friend gets these letters from the government saying you have all these tickets for your car for parking in these places. And he said, that's not me. I wasn't there. And then when he called them, they said, oh, don't worry about it. That must be the other guy who has the same number. Just throw those out. Just ignore them. And that was Rhode Island. You don't see that happening in Ontario. So it's not as backward as it could be.
Jen, last minute here in this segment.
Yeah, you know, I think just to pull a bit on the thread that Dan was bringing up, I think transparency is what people are looking for. I think the whole industry is so opaque right now, and people don't understand why what they're paying is so vastly different from what even perhaps their neighbor across the street in the same neighborhood, in the same jurisdiction, driving the same car is paying. So I think, you know, to the extent that people can see what they're paying for, and we can bring a little bit more transparency to this industry, then I think people will be able to do better stomach the bills that they're paying, and that's the place where government can play a role in terms of forcing the insurance companies to provide that transparency.
That's a great point.
All right. Well, the great points continue on the other side of this break, friends. Our Smart Speaker series, Dan Riskin, Genevieve Tomney, Matt Gurney, and Reshmi Nair. Smart Speakers continues. Matt Gurney, Dan Riskin, News Talk 1010 science expert, Genevieve Tomney, Vice President, Public Affairs at Proof Strategies. I'm Reshmi Nair, and we are talking about all the issues that matter to you on this Wednesday evening. We had some information coming out on I was going to start with Christmas trees. I'm not going to start with Christmas trees. I'm going to start with Alberta. We were talking a little bit about rural Canada during the commercial break.
That's way different.
It is.
We're going to talk Christmas trees. No, wait, Alberta.
Alberta's sovereignty.
That's like the story
Act.
Of my youth. That, you know, it's Christmas. No, you're just in Alberta. It was just a big switcheroo.
Well, yeah, Dan Riskin is our Albertan on the panel. We are seeing this Sovereignty Act introduced by Premier Danielle Smith there. The Prime Minister weighed in on this today, saying he's not looking for a fight. But the legislation is something to wade through here. Jen, when it comes to policy, are you concerned about the Sovereignty Act that Danielle Smith is bringing up here, essentially giving the provincial government power to override anything the feds want to do to protect many industries in Alberta, essentially making it its own region?
You know, I think what concerns me the most, Rashmi, is the sentiment and the message that this kind of legislation sends to the people of Alberta and the people of Canada, that there's this kind of us versus them mentality. And we joke that, you know, that exists in Canada, whether it be in the East or the West or even in Central Canada or Toronto versus everyone. But, you know, I think a big part of what makes this country so special and wonderful is the provinces and the regions and all of our little quirks and differences. So it's upsetting to me to see this conversation happening. And you know, I was a kid when the referendum happened in Quebec, and I don't know if any of you guys remember that crying babies ad, but that I still remember that. That stuck with me. And so I actually would like to see the Prime Minister pick a fight over this. I'd like to see him standing up and taking a stand and taking it as far as it can go, because I think that it's important in terms of, you know, the unity of this country and how we all feel about each other as Canadians.
Dan, one of the things that jumps out at me here, and it's not that I disagree with Jen, I don't think that I do, but I think the Prime Minister knows for a fact that any fight he picks with Alberta is going to be watched very carefully in Quebec. And I know for an Ontario angle here, when the Prime Minister just a couple of weeks ago was criticizing Doug Ford for using the notwithstanding clause, I had a bit of a laugh, because Doug Ford, probably the only thing he said during that week that actually made any sense to me is, wow, the Prime Minister really seems to care about using the notwithstanding clause when it's not in Quebec. This is a compromise we as a country have made to keep Quebec happy. I don't think we should be shocked to see other provinces starting to go, hey, we want the same deal.
Well, I mean, it's hard to really put a number on a whole province, right, in terms of like where they're sitting and where the barometer's at. But it's pretty clear that Alberta and, you know, parts of Central Canada aren't really on the same page politically. They don't love the Liberals out in Alberta. They don't vote for them. And so there's already some bad blood there. And Trudeau knows that he'd be stepping on a landmine if he says the wrong thing at the wrong time. Whereas Danielle Smith, you know, she came into power not by means of a general election. She says things quite often that turn a lot of heads within Alberta and elsewhere that make people go, I don't know how long we want to keep you at the helm. So she's already walking on a tightrope a little bit. I think for Trudeau to take a swing at somebody on a tightrope, maybe it's just better to sit back and let the person fall off the tightrope themselves. So, you know, this legislation has all kinds of holes you could drive a truck through or a whole trucker convoy through if you want. And this may just kind of fizzle out on its own. I don't know whether Trudeau standing up to this is going to be taken by Albertans as Trudeau fighting to get those Albertans into the fold, or if it's going to be taken as a push against the Albertans. So I can see why he just wants to back off and let this sort of burn a little bit to see who gets singed.
All right. You want to talk Christmas trees now, friends?
Oh, yeah.
Now let's talk Christmas.
Christmas trees. Have you all found one? Do you get the live stuff? They're hard to find. And if you do find a live Christmas tree, a real Christmas tree, I guess is what we call them. They're not alive anymore, are they?
They're dead Christmas trees by the time they're in your house.
Right.
Christmas tree corpse.
And they're costing more per corpse. Jen, do you have a tree?
I do have a tree, but my tree is not a real tree. And I remember when we bought our tree several years ago, you know, those fake trees can be very pricey. And I am now taking that to the bank in terms of, you know, inflation and the mileage that we've gotten out of this tree and the cost of trees this year. It feels like the best deal in town, although I don't think I'd want to be buying a tree this year, real or fake. Everything has gone up substantially, obviously, as we know.
Yeah, so true.
This year, we've gone back to fake tree. we had been doing Dead Tree in for a while, and I like it. I always was happy to bring it into the house, except every year I was doing ever more damage to the walls, the door frames. There were needles. It'd be the middle of August, and like the dog would walk out of the basement with like a bunch of pine needles on his mouth. So I just got vetoed this year while I was recently in Halifax for business, and I came back, and my wife had a fake tree. Nice. So I leave the province and things happen.
What does the scientist choose?
Well, we usually do. We take a dead tree, as you call it, although the whole definition of when it's alive and when it's dead, that's an interesting question, right? Because a lot of those cells are still working. They're pulling up water through the system. Like, is it dead or does it stay alive for a little while? I mean, it's clearly not going to reproduce. Anyway, you distracted me with that question. So now I got to think about whether the tree, when is the tree dead? When
zombie
is it officially
tree.
Dead?
When the needles fall, right?
Yeah, sure. So maybe it is alive all through Christmas. It's a miracle.
It's dying. No, we're it's dying. The dying process begins
sure.
when you pull it in the house.
Sure, we're all dying. I mean, let's
oh,
be honest.
Oh, we're back to that. Dan reminds me of this every time we interact.
All I'm going to say is if someone cut my head off, I don't want Dan sitting there going, yeah, but is he really dead yet?
But we could ask the question, and there isn't a very clear answer. It's interesting. Anyway, we usually go with the tree that's been cut. But for us, it's the experience of going out. We have some family friends that we go out with. We go to a Christmas tree farm. We bring a hacksaw. The kids love to pick the tree. We cut it. We shove it into the van. We drive back, and nobody can fit in the van because there's this giant tree in the way. And it's all those parts of the experience that we really cherish. Once it's in the house, it's fine. It really doesn't make that big a difference. But we haven't done it yet this year, and I guess we'll have to think about it with the price being up as it is, although I'm sure if it's put to a vote, the kids aren't going to care too much about what the price is, and they're going to want the darn tree.
I think what Dan meant to say is that he takes his kids out into the field and they murder a tree.
Hey, we have
but we do it as a family. Family murder is okay.
I got to ask you, Batman. We had a story on yesterday. Matt and I had a lot of fun with this. That there was a story that they found bats can hit higher octaves than Mariah Carey. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm all about this. I'm very excited about it. I've been trying to convert bat noises into musical notes to try to figure out what octave they sing at. I mean, this is a very exciting piece of science. And by the way, speaking of the scientific links to Christmas trees, I will just let you know that at the University of Toronto Scarborough, there's a lab that works on black widow spiders, and their number one place to get them is a Christmas tree farm, but I won't say where. But there's like this huge population of them at this one Christmas tree farm.
You got to shake those trees out before you sell them.
Yeah, pretty exciting, eh? They don't actually hurt you. Black widows have a bad rap. They won't actually hurt you. I mean, they could hurt a little bit, but they're not going to kill you. So don't freak out. But I'm just saying, it's a pretty funny story.
So in the space of 15 minutes, Dan has gone from, I don't want the person who is not a neurosurgeon giving me a needle to don't worry about the black widow spiders. They'll only hurt you a little bit.
And then when are you really dead? I guess if that's the sort of the missing link between those two sort of sides of my personality.
Hashtag science.
It messes you up. There's just no question.
I love it. Thank you all so much. Dan Riskin, News Talk 1010 science expert. Genevieve Tomney's already leaving the Zoom room. Vice President, Public Affairs at Proof Strategies. We appreciate you, Jen. Matt Gurney, Reshmi Nair here on The Rush. And coming up, you're going to hear from Bruce Ryder. He's the associate professor at York University, director of clinical legal education. He's talking about the Ford government's plan to appeal the Ontario Superior Court judge's decision to strike down Bill 124. We'll bring you up to speed in just a few minutes.